Welcome back to the IMD Podcast Network. This week, Mike Wade and Amit Joshi are talking tech with Carlos Condon and diving into how generative AI is reshaping supply chains.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Mike and Amit Talk Tech. Continuing our series where we invite guests who have written chapters or essays in our book Gain, it is a pleasure in this episode to welcome one of our own colleagues, Carlos Condon. And Carlos has had a really, really long, I'm saying 30 years of amazing experience in the areas of technology, supply chain, and strategy. So it was amazing to have him write this article in our book, and it's even more amazing to have you here with us today, Carlos. Thank you so much for joining.
The Carlos was a CIO back in the day before he joined the dark side and went flipped over to the academic world. But he has become an expert in supply chain and logistics and kind of all the stuff that goes on back office behind the scenes that you don't necessarily think or see, but necessarily has a huge impact on the way things work. So in your article, Carlos, you did mention something that was interesting, which we don't hear too much, which is that initial attempts to integrate Gen AI into supply chain operations have actually been disappointing. Maybe you could elaborate on that disappointment.
Yes. So one of the things that happens, particularly in supply chain, we need a lot of accuracy. Think about that. We want to forecast sales. We don't want to disappoint customers because there is no product available and so on. So while Gen AI at the beginning is very good as a part of discussion and so on, making a mistake in the amount of products, in the numbers, that basically is something that has a huge consequence for many companies, both in terms of cash flow, in terms of sales. So as a consequence, a lot of people were disappointed, particularly because when you ask something to ChatGPT, it seems that the answer is fantastic. The logic seems great. The formulas look great. And later on, you realize, oh my goodness, it made a mistake making a simple subtraction or a simple calculation. So this is why initially there was a lot of hope, but later on it was not. So let me even elaborate a little bit more on that. Supply chain is the kingdom of Excel. You go to any company and you will find a lot of Excel spreadsheets. Just as an example, we did some research in a company, in a fast-moving consumer goods company. They had, it was a big company, 1,100 planners. And we asked them, how often do you use Excel? The answer was 60% of the time they are working, they work on Excel. So basically means 660 FTEs, full-time equivalents, was basically using Excel. So this is why initially, anything that will make using Excel better, everybody was hyper excited, including myself. And at the beginning, it was a very big disappointment.
And Copilot is supposed to be integrating the power of ChatGPT into Microsoft tools like Excel. Are we seeing improvements in that regard?
That has been a game changer, something like in the last few weeks. So I remember we had a meeting, particularly with Microsoft. 1 year ago, they were showing Copilot, and it was like disappointing. Why? It couldn't do anything. And then now there is a new version of Copilot, and there is a part which is called Think Deeper. Absolutely amazing. Great analysis, great thinking, provides alternatives. So good that my expectation is that a lot of people is going to use it very strongly, to the point that some of the specialized AI applications for supply chain might disappear. It's really easy to use. I was commenting with Amit. We have another colleague, Jose Parra. We were working together and absolutely fantastic. It's not only that we use it in class, which is great. It's basically that one of the things that is happening is that we are going to get a boost of a lot of people using that. 3 weeks ago, I was with a set of executives, and it was interesting. They were saying, you know, my people is even asking this AI to create Excel spreadsheets to analyze things. And they said the challenge is that it's so sophisticated now that even my own people who are experts in Excel, they don't understand very well the Excel formulas that they are playing with. But to be short, that's a game changer now, and we will see a huge amount of use. So it has been very disappointed 1 year ago, last few months, game changer. And we'll see how people adopt it.
So I mean, just building off of that, Carlos, I mean, exactly like you said, I would suspect that in the coming months, we should start seeing adoption of this as people discover its power. But more importantly, in the following months, I assume we will see direct impact on supply chain efficiencies, but perhaps even on jobs in supply chain. Is that something you would say?
Yes and no. Let me clarify that. So one of the things that is happening in supply chain is the context, the geopolitical context, has become much more volatile. Tariffs on, tariffs off. The consequence has been that a lot of people in supply chain is working too much. Think about that. Suddenly, we need to source from somewhere else. The steel we need to find. So there is a lot of additional work and is much more uncertain than before. So what will happen is that these tools will help these people to do a better job, but I don't think that we will see anybody being laid off. Why? Because I can't imagine that. Even the forecast, which is the most typical thing that AI could do very well, much more difficult to do. All these changes, you see boycotts of these products, you see. So all these changes are going to mean that it will be a fantastic tool for people in supply chain to be able to do a better job that they would do without it. And so in that sense, I don't think we'll find anybody out. There is also another part, which is a much more, I would say, a strategic one. So if you think about supply chain, a lot of companies, precisely because of the geopolitical context, are thinking about the global footprint. Where should we buy? Where we should manufacture? Where we should have the warehouses? It's typically a reflection that is done once every few years. When you put a factory is going to be there for 5-10 years. The same with a warehouse. Now the issue is going to be, can we do a strategy work much more sophisticated with many more options than before? So before it was relatively easy. We would say a factory here in China, a factory for Europe, a factory for Americas. But now it's like, wait a minute, can we analyze not just 2 or 3 scenarios, but maybe 100? Without AI, we cannot do that. With AI, we can do this kind of thing. So we will see a lot of adoption, and this is why the job of people is going to change. My guess, and this is an opinion, is that because people in supply chain, they are so good using Excel, they will be one of the fastest adopters of some of these solutions. And one caveat, in supply chain, we had and we have a lot of specialized AI apps, companies like O9, OMP, Aira Technologies, and so on. These companies suffer a challenge, which was, if I'm somebody in supply chain, this is a black box. It provides me the answer. The demand is going to be 53,324. Why? I don't know. Now, with these new tools, they provide a very good explanation. And I will use that to talk a little bit about what we are doing with DeepSeek. DeepSeek is probably at this moment, and we'll see a lot of evolution, at this moment, probably one of the best tools for reasoning in supply chain. The chain of reasoning that some people basically complain, they say, is almost like a dissertation. It provides so many, even discusses with itself. Actually, it's a fantastic tool for supply chain to think about these scenarios, these different options, and so on. So Copilot is fantastic to do the calculations, to do the forecast, and so on. DeepSeek, and we have that in a container, as you know, here at IMD, for security reasons. Then it's fantastic for us, the reasoning of the strategy in supply chain and different scenarios. So that's a little bit what is happening. So very, very much to what Mike was saying. Just 1 year ago, 8 months ago, it was like disappointing. Now it's like, wow. What we are doing is amazing.
And if you were to forecast 1 year from now, I know it's impossible to do that, but just, you know, where could we be going with this?
So I think that if we look at, it's difficult, as you say, to forecast, but if we look at what is happening, it seems to me that we have reached a kind of relative maturity point or widespread use. So the tipping point for use of AI, Gen AI in particular, in supply chain, I think that we just reached that. Let me provide one example. 6 months ago, I would ask executives, how many of you have tried ChatGPT? 20-30%. 3 weeks ago, I did that, 90%. I asked Copilot, it was something like 50%. And even DeepSeek, and this was in Italy, where DeepSeek was almost forbidden, it was 20%. So that means people is experimenting, and my expectation is the same probably as yours, is that there will be a lot of different offers. There will be a lot of companies offering, and there's, we see now in Switzerland, we have Swisscom offering. You could have AI in a container, in servers in Switzerland, secure and so on. So the big change, and this is why I think everybody talk about the DeepSeek moment, is that it's not going to be big companies' game, it's going to be a small companies, good services. And then is where I think that a lot of companies will start to adopt it.
Carlos, I have a question for you in the B2C context, right? I mean, a lot of what you've said is in the B2B context, supply chain, but in the B2C context, more operations research than supply chain, if you really want to slice it that way. And what do I mean by this? I mean, companies like Uber, companies like Ocado, or you know, even Amazon, massive B2C companies that do delivery, that do matching, use incredible amounts of algorithms. What impact do you see on the B2C side of AI in operations research?
So very important, very debatable. Let me clarify. So you see that Amazon, since years ago, they were using AI, what they call advanced shipping, to predict what you would buy. So they were very sophisticated on that. You look at the robots they use in the warehouses, the Kiva robots, a fantastic, very sophisticated, dedicated AI. On the other side, what you see is that one of the things, and a colleague of ours, Ralph Seifer, he put a test, AI versus traditional optimization techniques. OR always win, absolutely. Why? Because it's the optimal of the optimal. Now, the challenge with these optimal techniques is we make assumptions and we need to put all the data there. And these assumptions are 10, 20%, 30%. So why do you want to have a better solution that is 3.23 better when the assumption is 20. I think that there what we're going to see is a lot of much more widespread use of these techniques. So actually, you ask GenAI and you ask GenAI to say, I want you to use this algorithm to optimize that, it will do it. Now, you need to know the algorithm. But at the same time, it's one of the things that you say, well, anyway, it's 20% more or less. So if you go specifically to that field in B2C, we are going to see precisely a lot of try to understand this consumer sentiment, how they are going to, what they are going to order, how can we deliver? And even something which is very, very interesting, are consumers willing to wait a little bit more or to pay a little bit more to be more sustainable? Or do they need really next day delivery? And let me provide you one data point. In a committee with the same, with somebody who was the CEO of the UK Postal Service, he was telling me, Carlos, before the pandemic, something like 1% of the consumers will choose a more sustainable delivery, probably waiting a little bit more or pay a little bit more. He said, now it's 10 to 15. So then people is realizing we can do that. And that is where AI can do a lot of things to help exactly to do that. It's not going to be the optimal. But before they were not doing that because it was too sophisticated. It required a lot of data preparation and so on. Now you can do that. Very, very detailed, but very meaningful. A lot of the challenge that we have, as you know, in AI is preparing the data, cleaning the data, the master data. I always say it's the most boring job in the world. And you need precisely to be very good at that. With GenAI, you can ask them, the GenAI, to assume the data is not there. And that means, particularly, I'm going to forecast something and it's like, oh my goodness, now I need to make some assumptions. I know a little bit about these events. I don't know the rest. But for that operations research, I need to put the assumptions. I need to say, this is zero, this is one. GenAI can do that for you. So my conclusion is we are going to see a massive use of techniques that we didn't see before because it will be easier. And in B2C, is a very, very important one because you don't have a lot of data. When you launch a new product, you try to understand the impact of, I don't know, this national holiday. All these things that we know we can optimize, but the effort to optimize that is so huge. And GenAI makes it much easier. So it's a very, very good question.
It's fascinating, Carlos, what you say, because I've always maintained that whether it's traditional analytics, AI, it is always a combination of art and science, right? I mean, it's never pure science. There is tremendous value for an experienced engineer, AI scientist who just knows, can smell whether a certain model will work, whether a certain optimization technique will work. And that cannot be taught, right? I mean, it's very, very hard. But it's absolutely fascinating what you're saying about the impact of Gen AI in this field.
Let me elaborate. The example I made about this company having more, which was B2C, more than 1,000 planners. Actually, the surprising thing is that the supply chain VP was telling me, Carlos, the most demanded training in our supply chain people is Excel. So you could imagine Excel using Gen AI, using Copilot, suddenly they can do many more things. So it's a kind of iPhone moment for me.
So you talk a lot about Excel, but what about, you know, the big pieces of software in supply chain, the ERP systems that are probably, I mean, to your point, more science than art, that are huge. Did you see those also being influenced and impacted by Gen AI?
Very much. Now we enter a theme. You said before, Mike, I had the past. I was a CIO. I even was a consultant implementing ERPs. We're talking about many decades ago. I could say that I even implemented SAP in the original assembler code. So you could imagine how was that. But one of the things that happens is that SAP or the ERPs in general are going to become the repository of data, of structured data. That's what's going to happen. To clarify that, for example, I remember a company. They were telling me they were using a software called O9 for planning because they said we thought that the version of SAP was not appropriate to our context. And then after years of use, they realized that people in supply chain, they were using O9 to extract the data from SAP, to put that in Excel, to work out in Excel, and to put that back in SAP through O9. So that's what we're going to see. So I think that we are going to see basically the idea of using, in that sense, the ERP as a kind of plumbering, as a kind of infrastructure to keep the data there in someone. Very inflexible at the moment. And I think that what we are going to see is a lot of these AI specialized software, even SAP tries to sell that, a little bit going down because people is going to use much more what they create. And let me clarify that, for example, because let me provide you one example. Imagine that you're a fashion company and you say, we are selling products like T-shirts. Now, these T-shirts and these products is the classics. So we know managing that is not the same as the flashy products that are going to be there for 3 months. And still, you look at the processes, we have exactly the same processes everywhere. We are managing the sales through retailers the same as the sales through online. And it's like, yeah, you know, we cannot have so many different places, so many different things. And even you go to some companies, they find that the ERP implementation in one business unit is different from the other, the famous parameterization. So that's creating a lot of complexity. AI is going to be able to manage that much better. So what we may see is that the use of ERPs still will be there, but the functionality out of that is going to be reduced, and many more people is going to use these solutions. The next step, and this is something that we'll see how it happens, is when the ERP is going to disappear. Now, question about that, if you think about the ERP, particularly in supply chain, the models go back 40 years, the bill of material, the MRP, those models were developed given different constraints that we have today. And then is when you say, ideally, what I would like as a company, I have an order from a customer, instant answer. Where can I deliver it given that I changed the manufacturing order, I changed the supply order, I changed everything? That would be the ideal world. This is what companies like Amazon do with just with the warehouse, with its stock they have in the warehouse. They could go back, it would be fantastic. So that's the evolution we're going to see. We are not going to see yet the death of the ERP. I think we're going to see a reduction of the functionality that we use out of that. I don't know, what's your opinion, Mike? Because you are also very much into that than you, Amit.
I think that the ERP systems are so embedded in organizations, in processes, you know, systems that they're going to be very, very hard to extract. But I think you are seeing and already seeing, you know, pieces of what used to be done in these systems being unpicked by specialist tools, more adaptable tools, flexible tools, so that I think you're right on, Carlos, that they'll still exist, but they'll become much, much more kind of into the plumbing rather than into the sort of strategic end of what businesses do.
I'm with you on this. I mean, if I am the CEO of SAP or one of these pure play ERP systems, I would be very worried today. I would be scrambling. I'd be scrambling to, you know, include agents, to include this, just so that I can include unstructured data and natural language capabilities, which till yesterday were not available. Because if you don't do that, and if you still keep focusing on the pure play ERPs, yeah, exactly like Mike said, I think it's going to be a little bit of a piranha strategy where they nibble away at the edges. But in a decade or so, there'll only be a skeleton left. Huh? But Carlos, I have one last question for you. And this is slightly different. In the context of AI in general, or AI in supply chain and operations, or sustainability, or your key areas of focus, what keeps you awake at night? What are your biggest fears?
So I think that the biggest fears are related. One is that basically it can go wrong. It can make very wrong decisions, and that people might lose the capability to understand that these are the wrong decisions. And I'm saying that because that's not basically anything else but, are we going to get the skill at doing that? And I always say with AI, particularly in supply chain, you need to do the same as what you do with Excel, which is you do the Excel spreadsheet and you'd verify. With AI, you need to do that. Do it and verify. Have people lost the capability to verify? Not now. Would they lose it in a few years? It might be. And they might even lose simply the habit of verifying it. And that could be very important. Now, that's one of the big risks. I think that there are many other risks, but that to me is the biggest one. The others, I think that about validity of data, about hallucination and so on, I think that the development is trying to take care of that. But that one is the one that I think it could go wrong. Remember, and it doesn't happen anymore, remember 20 years ago when some companies were saying, oh, we almost bankrupted the company when we implemented the new ERP. You might remember there were lawsuits against some of these companies. So is that something that might happen? And there I think that we need much more precisely people who are going to want that. So the challenge is, exactly as you were saying, Amit, are we going to fire people? At the moment, no. But if the situation stabilizes, then we may say we don't need them anymore. And the answer is yes, you need them. It's a little bit like when you go to a factory, which is highly automated, you have this control room. And in the control room, if you are there for a while, you will see something very interesting happening. A lot of alarms going off, on. And the operator say, okay, it's a false alarm. What happens when somebody is not capable of distinguishing, is this a false alarm or not? And that's basically where we might have a lot of problems, particularly from a safety point of view. You can imagine a furnace in a kind of factory going off. You can imagine basically having too much inventory of something that suddenly somebody orders too much. And just, I cannot mention the company, but last year, I remember one company was telling me, Carlos, it's amazing. We lost so many sales because somebody in planning thought that we had too much inventory, canceled the order from the supplier, and that was 20 million of stock that was out. So those mistakes are like, oh my goodness, in just 3 weeks, you made a huge mistake. These are the ones that I would say these are the biggest risks. And related with that is also the consequence of safety and so on. Although I should say that typically in safety, we tend to be relatively good. But these are the ones that I suppose that we will hear some complaints at some point in time that somebody trusted too much, didn't verify, and we got those challenges.
It's a super relevant point. You know, we've been outsourcing all kinds of things to machines for decades, right? I mean, I don't need to know advanced math anymore. I don't need to remember phone numbers anymore. But at some point, we can outsource too much critical thinking so that we no longer have the ability to know what we're doing, or we make decisions that shouldn't be made because we're relying too much on the technology. I think that's an excellent point. Carlos Cordon, thank you so much for speaking with us today. It's been a super interesting deep dive into the world of supply chain and how generative AI is impacting that field. So great, great to hear from you. If any of you would like to know more information about this podcast or about IMD, please visit our website at imd.org. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you next time on Mike and Amit Talk Tech.
That's all for this week. This podcast was proudly brought to you by the International Institute for Management Development in Lausanne. You can find out more at imd.org.